Hi, babe, it's Tilly here. If you didn't know, Susan and I are directing a very trans short film, and the producers are crowdfunding it, and now you can support it and help make it happen. Set 25 years into the future, along the way is a sci-fi story about Victoria and the father who died when she was very young. As a trans woman who transitioned as an adult, her father never got to know her truth. She uses a one round trip only time travel device to jump back to our present and meet the man she can barely remember, bond with him over comics, and try to find out if he'd love her for who she really is. Written and directed by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, original comic art by our friend and GLAAD award-winning artist Richard Fairgray, produced by Erin McDonald, science consultant to Star Trek, Erin Loss, and Jessie Earle, known for her Jessie Gender YouTube channel. Crowdfunding is open from February 19th until March 21st, and there's a lot of cool rewards, including comics and pins featured in the film, shoutouts, behind-the-scenes stuff, and you can even get a producer credit. Check out all the details at tinyurl.com/longawayshort. And even if you can't monetarily support the project, which we completely understand, please sign up to follow the project and post about it and spread the word. Every little bit helps us make our budgetary goals so we can make this movie. Because we need trans stories now more than ever. Thank you for your support. Love you. Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This week we're talking about the dream, and pools and makeup and self-discovery and, if we're lucky, self-acceptance in the intentional trans allegory of Real Genius, Part 3. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady whose love keeps my laser powered, Susan Bridges.
Wow.
Because there's a laser in the movie that they're working on, see?
My and they laser. Needed to, that sounds very...
They needed to up the power source.
That does not sound good.
And you that's... keep my laser powered. I didn't even realize.
Yeah, now
that
you
was
do.
Innocent.
Now you do.
Okay, well...
Was it innocent? Was it?
Okay. And our returning guest is the redoubtable Kestrel Clayton. Welcome back again, Kes.
Hi, it's so great to be here again.
All right, for you, what has been the most surprising thing about transition?
Well, I'm actually going to cheat and give you two answers to that.
Very well, I accept.
Although they're really two sides of the same coin, part of it, I was surprised how many people have been genuinely supportive. I hovered on the edge of hatching for more than a decade. And although I never framed it to myself in these exact terms, part of me always thought everyone will hate me. No one will want me to be this big, weird, you know, gender-defying thing. But most people I've found have been pretty cool with it. As I mentioned in a previous episode, not everybody is a fantastic ally.
Yeah.
But I've also faced a lot less overt opposition than I expected. Although coming into 2025, that is changing. And performative anti-trans hatred is becoming more socially acceptable. Uh-huh. The other side of that coin, though, is I have met such wonderful people, such an incredible community. People that I never would have known and would not have been able to be around before I started being my real self.
Yeah.
You and Susan, for example, are people that not only would I not have known you had I not come out to myself as trans, but how would I have been able to relate to you, to a lot of these wonderful trans people I know? I just would have felt awkward because something in me would have said, I want to be like this, but I can't. That's not for me. I'm not strong enough. But it turns out I am strong enough, which is
pretty
awesome.
Yeah, you are. And, you know, I wanted to say about what you said earlier about thinking that you wouldn't be accepted because, you know, you would be this big gender nonconforming thing. And that is what society wants us to think, right? Transphobic society teaches us that that's how you'll be viewed and that's what everyone will think of you to try to keep us from transitioning. So it's totally understandable that you felt that way. I did too. And I think it's also tied up with gender dysphoria, you know, thinking I would never make a pretty woman, so I can't transition. And that's dysphoria, babes. So there's so much that gets wrapped up in all that. And it's really hard for any of us to break through it, to crack that shell and accept, you know, in spite of everything that society says and does. So.
And if you want to be an Amazon, be an Amazon.
I love to be an Amazon.
It's pretty cool.
It's really good.
Amazons are cool.
And I have more to say about Amazon-ness and and one's own path to gender that we're going to get to in this episode.
Excellent. Okay. As a reminder, you need to have the context from part one in episode 103 about writer P.J. Torokvay and the time this movie was written and filmed in. And of course, part two in episode 104, where we began examining the allegory itself, which includes all the setup you need that makes the rest of the allegory work. Okay, let's go. 19 minutes, 40 seconds. Mitch is in a sweater and then falls into a pile of ice. He was somehow prepared for what was waiting for him without even knowing it, just from one conversation with Chris. But look at Chris now. Still not dressed how you'd expect. He's prepared for the cold, but he's not conforming. 20 minutes, 24 seconds. While Chris is listing off his jokey problems, did you catch the gender nonconforming one? Quote, we had one entry for the Madame Curie lookalike contest, and he was disqualified later. Do you see the transness baked into this movie right under the surface?
I would bet you folding money that line was written by P.J. Torokvay.
Absolutely it was. Cis people don't tend to write those lines.
No, they really don't.
No. 22 minutes, 28 seconds. Kent, King Conformo, calls Mitch and Chris degenerates, even while he was the one found naked and alone with a bowl of Jell-O. So there's something off about Kent, right? Even though he's the most adamant about being who Hathaway and society want him to be. Again, he is a self-hating trans person, and seeing those who've embraced their true selves and found joy disgusts him because he's disgusted with himself for not having the courage to do the same.
Although we see the same thing with conservatism, where these people are absolutely horrible, horrible people, and all they do is point to everyone else about how horrible everyone else is.
Yep.
In that scene, Kent is described as sexually frustrated, but I think he's gender frustrated.
I would absolutely agree with you. Although those two things can get mixed up in your head sometimes. See the episode on sexuality is not gender.
This is true. And also for a lot of us, for me certainly, becoming the gender we are transforms the way we experience our own sexuality and makes it a lot more comfortable.
Absolutely. There's a whole thing and a whole bunch of trans people I know that are very uncomfortable with any kind of sexuality or sexual activity pre-transition because it spikes dysphoria. It makes you feel bad. You're getting possibly, depending on your sexuality, you're getting close to a body that you wish you had. And that also spikes really uncomfortable and hard, difficult feelings to deal with. So much of that gets all wrapped up together in your head.
Well, and also the historic way trans people were treated, like if you transition, you still had to be performatively heterosexual.
Right.
And for me, when boy moding, I always found the expectations of men and masculinity really off-putting because there's this expectation that you will be certain ways when you're in control, that you will be the decision maker, that you will be the pursuer. And none of that really ever felt comfortable for me. I did not want control over my intimate partners. And I still like girls, but now I like them without all of those uncomfortable expectations about how I should like them.
Yeah, absolutely. 22 minutes, 31 seconds. Even when sleeping, Mitch conforms to the quote-unquote dress code of men, pants and a shirt with a collar in men-coded colors. He then sees Hollyfeld again and checks the closet more thoroughly, but still can't find him. 24 minutes, 19 seconds. Look how Chris sleeps. Almost naked, comfortable with himself, and still not conforming to what society expects. In every aspect of his life, he is true to himself. 24 minutes, 36 seconds. Jordan finds Mitch in the men's bathroom. Even here, in a place only for men, he cannot escape the woman that captivates him. What do you think that means? She made him a sweater, the thing he was wearing when they met that prepared him for the world outside. She is helping him with that preparation.
OMG, Jordan. I didn't recognize it at the time when I was a wee one, but Jordan was one of my earliest cases of gender envy. Something about her was extremely compelling.
Yeah.
I wasn't in love with her, but I just like, wow, something about this person. I didn't have a word for what I was feeling. Now I understand I wanted to be her.
Yeah.
This fictional character may be the closest I ever got to the very eggy stereotype of date the girl you wish you were.
Yeah. 25 minutes, 8 seconds. Jordan tells him if he ever needs to talk, she's only a couple doors down and never sleeps, so she's always there for him if he needs her.
Jordan is clearly rocking the spectrum. She doesn't immediately understand social context. She's well-meaning but often awkward. She's intensely focused on her own interests and assumes everybody else is equally interested. As someone on the spectrum myself, I found her very relatable.
Yeah. And this bit with Jordan is also, you know, sort of waking up to the real you inside and knowing the real you is always in there, always, whenever you need her. 25 minutes, 49 seconds. Chris, was it a dream where you see yourself standing in a sort of sun god robes on a pyramid with 1,000 naked women screaming and throwing little pickles at you? Mitch laughs and says, no, Chris, why am I the only person that has that dream? Okay, this dream is one of the most trans things about the entire movie. He sees himself in fancy robes, not naked like everyone else, is atop a pyramid, he's a focal point, and naked women are throwing pickles at him. Now, in the present, pickles are a thing with many trans women. A common part of HRT for many of us is testosterone blockers, which deplete the salt in our bodies. And so the body craves salt, and that leads to pickles. And it is such a thing we make constant memes and jokes about it. Did HRT in the 80s do the same? Does the trans women in pickles thing stretch back that far? I don't know. It feels unlikely since community with other trans people was much harder to find back in the 80s due to the lack of internet, but also the way we were often required to hide our transness and socially isolate ourselves. Listen to episode 60, all about transmedicalism, for more. And one horrid side effect of that, or maybe even part of the intended effect if you think about it for a few minutes, is that we were almost entirely unable to form communities or a shared culture. There very much is a trans culture now, and trans subcultures, and trans women, trans men, and non-binary people. And that allows things like memes and jokes specific to common experiences to emerge. Back in the 80s, that would have been impossible in more than very small in-person gatherings, which were also likely few and far between and difficult to locate if they existed at all. So my gut says pickles being here is a coincidence, and probably only because pickle is a funny word. But what does naked women throwing small phallic objects at a person dressed differently from them who has been elevated to a place of prominence and focus, a cis white man, say to you metaphorically? Because it very much reads to me like someone's subconscious trying to tell them they're a transgender woman and not a cisgender man. Look at us, naked and honest with ourselves, with nothing to hide, throwing away a phallus that we do not want.
Paging Dr. Freud.
You do not need to have or want bottom surgery to be a trans woman, but at the time this movie was made, you absolutely did if you wanted to medically transition. So when Chris asks, why am I the only one who has that dream? It speaks to how it must have felt to realize your transness back then. We had little to no cultural footprint, and most people had likely never met or even heard of trans people back then and knew nothing about them. So realizing you're not like everyone else and not the gender you were assigned at birth very likely made you feel extra isolated and alone, like you were somehow the only person like that, This entire dream screams transness all the way through.
And as an example of how deeply this movie affected me,
yeah.
I have probably quoted Chris's dream to people 100 or more times in my life.
I mean, it's also a really funny line, so.
Oh, it's hilarious, but
yeah.
There's more than just comedy as to why that stuck with me.
Absolutely right. Your subconscious was like, hey, there's something there.
Absolutely.
Mitch, did you know there's a guy living in our closet? Chris confirms he sees Hollyfeld too, and is well acquainted with him, knows his name. Mitch asks why Hollyfeld keeps going in the closet, and Chris responds by asking Mitch why he goes into the closet. Of course, Chris knows Hollyfeld. He knows what it's like to be in the closet before coming out or self-accepting. And at one time, that was his potential future, too. He's directly asking Mitch why he goes in there is another clue to you what the movie's trying to tell you with its trans allegory. Why are you hiding yourself?
This movie has a lot to say about Laszlo, Chris, and Mitch and closets. That's not subtext. That's text.
Almost supertext. Almost.
Almost supertext. A term I learned from you.
I invented it, I think.
Invented it. It's yours.
Woo! 27 minutes, 32 seconds. In the going to school montage, we see Mitch is trying to figure out why there's a guy in the closet. He's looking at him through a reflection. A reflection. Mitch is seeing what his own future is going to be, pretending to be a cis man in a closet, and it's miserable. I've talked so many times about how reflections and photos affect trans people, and they're also heavily used in the allegory of the Matrix movies. Check out episode 91 of this show to learn all about those.
And what do we usually see in mirrors? We see ourselves. So Mitch looks into a mirror and he sees Laszlo.
Yeah.
The saint.
27 minutes, 41 seconds. Mitch tries to follow Hollyfeld out the door, but as soon as he opens it, Jordan comes in. What will prevent him from following in the path of that potential future self and a life in the closet? Paying attention to the non-conforming woman he can't get away from. 28 minutes, 11 seconds. Mitch starts dressed in his suit, ultra male. Then he's dressed just like Hathaway, trying to be just like him, trying so hard to be cis, to be accepted. But then his clothing gradually starts to get more casual, and then he's even wearing the sweater Jordan made him. He's moving along the path. 28 minutes, 34 seconds. While everyone else is recording the lectures, Mitch is still going to class. He is not conforming, which follows along with his style of dress loosening up. He's already starting to do what he thinks is right and not what society expects. 28 minutes, 57 seconds. Mitch drops his papers and Hollyfeld helps him collect them and they share a moment of recognition. Is this Mitch finally realizing they're not so different, that this could be the future that awaits him? The song that plays over the montage where Mitch becomes more of his true self is I'm Falling, credited to the CS Angels, who are only called that in the US and were the ComSat Angels everywhere else. Have you listened to the lyrics of this song? Because, phew!
That scene with Laszlo and the book drop hits me so hard every time. Again, this movie has a lot that's communicated non-verbally in gesture and eye contact. He drops the books. Laszlo helps pick them up. Their eyes lock.
Yeah.
And Laszlo has this look of innocence touched with sorrow. I think he knows they are the same. So many of us trans people can sense others even before we fully know what we are. I don't know about you, but for me, a lot of people that I met boy mode who were boy moding themselves hatched. And then I hatched, and a lot of other people I've known have hatched since then. And a lot of them have said to me, seeing you do this made me believe I could do this.
Yeah.
And that's the way I feel about some of my trans elders. Seeing you do this made me believe I could do this. But we so often sense each other. We see something in others that is of ourselves, and we connect.
Yeah. I know I've mentioned this many times, but I think I talked about it in depth in the episodes on trans intersectionality and the false dichotomy, where our guest was Mina, who is a friend that I've had for a very long time and I always felt a connection to. And this was back when we were both boy moding. And then we sort of fell out of touch for a little while. And when we reconnected, we found out we had both transitioned. So yeah, it absolutely, absolutely happens. We can recognize each other, even if we don't know what that is that we're glomming onto. There's something that says, hey, you are like me in a way that I can't quite put my finger on, but I know it. I know it. You can tell.
And I think it's also significant that in a movie that is so full of very masculine-coded cruelty, dominance, patriarchal violence, this is a very simple gesture of kindness. And we only ever see Laszlo being kind. As far as I noticed, he's never mean to anybody. He's a really sweet person.
He is. He's also very soft-spoken and gentle in like every way. Okay, so let's get into the lyrics of that song. Quote, I never thought this could happen. I never thought I could feel this way until this strange reaction today. You give me a new sensation in a place that has no name. Something tells me I'll never feel the same. Now it's all changed. What have you done to me? I'm falling endlessly. I began to slip. I did not know what was coming next. Even so, I was not prepared for this. I used to think nothing mattered. Now I see possibilities. You showed a new direction to me, and it's all changed. If you don't think that reads like a trans awakening, I do not know what to tell you. Now, PJ did not direct this movie or produce, as far as I know, and most likely had no choice over the use of this song. Further, it does not appear that any of the Comset Angels are trans, though referring back to trans people in history in episode 79, you never know who is trans and doesn't know it yet, or who is trans and can't be out. But what I think is more likely is that this coincidentally perfectly fits the theme of Mitch's trans awakening because any kind of moment of deep self-revelation in any human shares a lot of similarities. Because trans stories are human stories. We are all connected. So I don't feel that song was likely picked because of how trans it reads, but rather the trans allegory of awakening and self-acceptance so closely matches so many other awakenings that we humans go through, cis and trans alike. 30 minutes, 24 seconds. There's a shot from inside the closet. Here again, we see the skeleton inside. It is there haunting Mitch. Living in the closet is indeed a kind of death, a death of our true selves, a waking death that keeps us from truly living our lives. 32 minutes, 35 seconds. Hollyfeld lives in the closet alone. It's dark, it's dirty, it's filled with cobwebs, it's a lonely existence cut off from the world. His autograph machine is filling out contest forms. He has to game the system to find a way to exist in the world. Trans life in a nutshell, because society makes it so difficult for us to exist, thanks to bigoted Republican gas station hot dogs.
And Mitch getting into Laszlo's closet comes at such a turning point in the film. Mitch is settling in at Pacific Tech, but he's starting to realize all of these things he was told he wanted, all of these things he was told would make him happy, are not making him happy. The real world, the person he's told to be, these are not what he was promised. And he sees a glimpse of this liminal space with a liminal person in it, playing by a different set of rules and rejecting the expectations that are being put on Mitch. And I, rewatching it this week, I thought, this is how I felt the first time I got to know in person a trans woman. And on some level, it was way before I could acknowledge this to myself. This was 15 years before I finally cracked. But I was thinking, this is not what I was told it was. This person isn't a freak or a mutant. This is a really sweet woman, and gosh, I just find her so gosh darn relatable. I got a glimpse outside the system for the first time, and I think it took a while, but after that, my hatching became inevitable.
I think I had a very similar experience with the first trans woman I met in person, and I was like, huh, wow, society really was just lying about all of this, wasn't it?
And that is why the gas station hot dogs are so desperate to erase us, make us invisible, because the more people see that we exist and we're real, we're valid, and we
And we're
can
just
live
normal human
lives,
beings.
we can be ourselves and live lives full of joy that we never believed we could have. Every single one of us contributes to hashing others and lets people be more of themselves. Representation is so important.
So important.
Sorry, getting a little passionate here.
That's nothing to apologize for. 33 minutes, 18 seconds. Hathaway wants to know what that smell is. He hates the popcorn. Here's something that brings Chris joy and is barely a minor inconvenience to Hathaway, but it must be eliminated because he doesn't like it. In my book on The Matrix, Begin Transmission, in the section on the first movie, I discuss Agent Smith's speech about the smell of humans. It's an inconvenience he wanted removed because his inconvenience was more important to him than our right to exist and be happy. And here, Chris tosses the popcorn aside. He may have self-accepted, but he'll also do what he has to in order to be quote-unquote accepted by the people who don't really even care about him. So part of him, in some small way, is still conforming. This speaks to things like trans women in the 80s having to pretend to be attracted to men even if they weren't, just to be quote-unquote allowed access to medical transition care. And as we know from that article after PJ's death, she was not attracted to men. Did she have to pretend like she did to access her care? Did she refuse to lie and thus had to wait to access care until cis gatekeepers got their shit together? We don't know, but it was clearly on PJ's mind in the early 80s.
And a lot of our trans elders had to do that.
Yep.
They may be Chris Knight deep down with the I Heart Toxic Waste shirt, but they have to put on the expectations imposed on them and say, oh yes, I'm super girly and boy, I sure am heterosexual. I love men so much. And they had to play the game to get through. Like Laszlo and like Chris, they had to find a way to turn the system against itself.
Right. And there's lots more about that coming up because it was definitely something PJ was wrestling with.
I also think a lot about popcorn in this movie, which seems very, very metaphorical to me. Popcorn
is
something that you transform. And nobody sits there and eats a bag full of popcorn kernels. They're unappealing. They don't taste pleasant.
Yeah.
But you transform them and suddenly they're this fun, delicious, joy-inducing thing.
Yeah. There's a whole lot more with popcorn later too, so stay tuned. 34 minutes, 6 seconds. Hathaway talks about his wishes for what Chris would become and says, and then Chris cuts him off with, I got a haircut. Society wants us to be cis, but trans people go and change our presentation to suit ourselves instead. Do you see how this is so very trans? 35 minutes, 53 seconds. Hathaway says Chris's attitude is distracting Mitch and is therefore a problem. Stop showing Mitch that he can be trans too. Chris mentions he's leaving school soon, but Hathaway reminds him he can't graduate without passing Hathaway's class. Hathaway is the gatekeeper and will prevent Chris from moving on in his life if he doesn't get what he wants. Again, cis people are the gatekeepers of everything trans people need in this world. Access to HRT or surgeries, legal name and gender marker changes, equal rights, living our lives without cis violence, and more. The Matrix also talks about this a lot, directly. You can read about my own experiences with cis gatekeeping and how I had to quote-unquote prove I was a woman just to begin medical transition in Trans Kids and the Intake Exam at tillystranstuesdays.com. 38 minutes, 59 seconds. Mitch is getting frustrated, so Chris uses the work to lead Mitch to freedom, relaxation, a party, joy. Chris believes that by working within the system, even if it means tossing his popcorn away, pretending to be attracted to men, for example, you can achieve what you want. And back then, that wasn't wrong. It sucked, but it was what you had to do. 40 minutes, 24 seconds. Even though Chris has jumped in the water and is soaked and is hitting on women, he has not taken his shirt off. Like Neo wouldn't in The Matrix. Like I wouldn't if I could at all avoid it for all my life pre-transition, even when swimming, because my flat chest spiked my dysphoria.
The pool scene is very gender binary.
Yeah.
So it introduces these people to us as beauticians, and the options feel like you're a beautician. You know, you are a woman who is getting educated in this way that is allowed to women.
Yeah.
Or you're a male-coded science genius nerd brain. And these are the only two options for people. Everyone is one of these two things.
Yeah.
That resonated with me, especially post-transition, because I'm trans femme, but non-binary.
Yeah.
My presentation is fairly butch, but I am not a man. I'm
right.
A butch girl who defies gender expectations, and I love it. I don't look like Chris Knight, but I also don't look like any of these beauticians. I don't want to. That's not who I am.
Yeah.
So we are outside that system.
Yeah. And society will also tell you, especially people in PJ's time, you had to hit all of what whatever your doctors thought a woman should be. So you had to wear high heels and skirts and put makeup on. And you don't have to do that to be a woman, cis or trans, right? But that was the expectation. And if you didn't, they wouldn't give you the care you needed. So it was really messed up. 40 minutes, 28 seconds. A lady in a bikini is going to eat a cheeseburger and Chris tells her to stop. Don't you know that eating that can give you large breasts? Is this a joke or is it something more? Put a pin in it for a bit, and when that pin comes out, it's going to be one of my favorite things about this entire movie. 40 minutes, 48 seconds, and 42 minutes, 8 seconds. Not only has Hathaway conformed and been rewarded for it, but he's found a way to still wear makeup within the acceptable bounds of society for men being on television. This is kind of what Chris is doing, but to more of an extreme. Hathaway wants Chris to be himself, but only so much as it still fits within the bonds of the cis binary laid out for us. But note that this is a false option, as even Hathaway can't get away with it, as we'll see in a minute. You can see this also in the trans allegory of I Saw the TV Glow, which began in episode 81 of this show, where there are tons of motivational posters and slogans about being true to yourself that all of us are bombarded with for all our lives. But as soon as trans people do that, society says, no, not like that. Also in here, note that Kent directly sells out Mitch and Chris, literally turning on trans people like him to gain favor with the white cis men in power. Thanks so much, Caitlyn Jenner and Brianna Wu. May you step on a Lego with bare feet every day for the rest of your lives.
And again, Kent just loves taking these figuratively trans people and forcing them back into line. He loves punishing them. Because again, if I got a boy mode, you do too. No fair, no fair. I'm not going to suffer alone.
42 minutes, 49 seconds. Despite wanting to enjoy himself, Mitch is apart and alone, even at a party full of people. Again, like Neo in The Matrix. Like me at every party or social gathering for my entire life until I transitioned. Because to be perceived means having to put the mask back on to be seen and try to play the part of someone that it hurts us to be.
That resonates. I've also found that I am way more social.
Same.
As a woman than I ever was as a man.
Yeah.
I think I may actually be an extrovert, which
I am. It was a surprise.
Quiet, non-talkative boy becomes the girl who just likes and is liked by everybody. How the heck did that happen?
And never shuts up, as Susan will tell you.
I know.
Okay.
And never shuts up, as my husband will also tell you.
42 minutes, 52 seconds. Jordan arrives and Mitch lights up with a smile. There's definitely something to this non-conforming woman he keeps seeing. 43 minutes, 22 seconds. Jordan has gotten Mitch more into the party than before, but he wants to know why she's not necking. Her emphatic reply, "I'm not gay." To me, this speaks to the way our sexuality can confuse our understanding of our own gender. This calls directly back to the letter about PJ Torikvay and her saying she couldn't be a gay man because that's not who she was. See Sexuality is Not Gender in episode 73 of this podcast.
When I first came out to my mother, she told me that I couldn't be trans because I'd always, well, she said girl crazy, which I think is overstating it. But yes, I have always liked women. But the whole
same, yeah.
You can't be trans because you like women. Well, but that's not the same thing. It's like saying I can't be a redhead because of my height. Those two are totally separate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all goes back to that transmedicalism in WPATH version 1, where it said that's the only way you could transition. Right. So messed up.
And also the enforced cisgender heterosexuality of all of society telling you can't be this way.
Yep. Comp cishet. It's real and it sucks. Jordan explains how she's different and guys are a little afraid of her. Remember Mitch saying other kids were intimidated by him? And if she stopped to think about it, she'd be a little upset. Also note that Jordan brings a breathing apparatus to help Mitch breathe underwater. In episode 59 on gender dysphoria, I described mine as like drowning. In my interview with Maya Deen, author of Wrath Goddess Sing, my favorite novel ever, we talked about the metaphor she used for dysphoria. Being trapped at the bottom of a well. You can find that interview at tillystranstuesdays.com. Jordan, the non-conforming woman, provides Mitch with the relief he needs from gender dysphoria. Do you see what this is telling Mitch here? Non-conforming womanhood can provide the rescue he needs.
And Jordan's outfits in this movie are generally not super femmy, not super
No, they're not
sexualized.
sexualized.
She's wearing that very cute wetsuit, but
Yeah.
it covers most of her body in a scene where there are all these other women who are wearing bikinis.
Yeah.
So she's a woman, but not necessarily in the way society thinks women should be, especially in the extremely sexist 1980s.
Yeah, she is a gender non-conforming woman in like every single way.
Absolutely.
Hathaway then arrives to remind them of their obligations to cis society and chastise Mitch for even a moment of finding himself, for being happy. And look what spending time with non-conforming femininity has gotten Mitch and how embarrassed he looks, which is just how society wants him to feel. Again, this is something the Matrix dealt with several times, especially in Resurrections. You have obligations to cis society, so abandon this trans nonsense and uphold the binary like you're supposed to. They want us to believe there's no joy to be found in accepting your transness. 44 minutes, 54 seconds. Here, Hathaway gets called out for wearing makeup since this is a thing men aren't supposed to do, even within the bounds of society, and I have to do it so I don't get washed out by the lights on camera, you still get made fun of for it. This is showing you it's a false choice. Tossing away the popcorn to appease the cis binary won't actually make them okay with you. You're still an outsider and an outcast, and PJ knew it.
Leopards eating faces.
Thanks for being here, Cass.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I am having so much fun with this series of podcasts. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yay! Next time, we're going to wrap up with Mitch's final outcome. You'll see where he ends up and the remarkably beautiful message about trans people that Real Genius has waiting for you. Tilly Bridges, End Transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The written essay version of this week's topic and all past topics is available at tillystranstuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky and on Mastodon at tillybridges at mastodon.social, and you can find Susan on those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of tillystranstuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. If you'd like to keep up with all the writing that Susan and I do, you can sign up for our newsletter at birdguestbroadcast.com. If you enjoy this show, please take a moment to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. The largest segment of our listeners find the show there, and more reviews equals a higher profile, which means it will reach more of the people who need it. Thank you for your support. For more information, visit pendantaudio.com. Thanks for listening.